Harih Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Proverbs 65. On the other hand, one should not misunderstand that a devotee in transcendental devotional service can act in all kinds of abominable ways. This verse only refers to an accident due to the strong power of material connections. Devotional service is more or less a declaration of war against the illusory energy. As long as one is not strong enough to fight the illusory energy, there may be accidental fall downs. But when one is strong enough, he is no longer subject to such fall downs, as previously explained. No one should take advantage of this verse and commit nonsense or think he is still a devotee. If he does not improve in his character by devotional service, then it is to be understood that he is not a high devotee. No one should take advantage of this verse and commit nonsense, right? And think he is still a devotee, right? So now, if he does not improve in his character by devotional service, then it's to be understood that he is not, and we would expect, a devotee, right? But it says not a high devotee, right?
Okay. And yet sometimes, to our surprise, we see some very, what we would call, high devotees come down.
No, but the point is it's Maya as such. That's why the story of Bharat Maharaj is in the Bhagavatam. Because otherwise we get shocked, oh, they could never fall. No. The point is until you come to the platform of prema, then there's always a chance. Mm-hmm. Like that. But the point is devotional service is not lost. Right? Mm-hmm. It's just talked about so strongly so that one will be careful. Mm-hmm. Like that. But otherwise it's not that something can't happen. Mm-hmm. And it's not that, well, if it happened to them, then what's my chance? No, everyone's individual. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what their weaknesses are, strengths are, that's different. Right? So their faith in Krishna consciousness is greater. That's why they're more advanced. Right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that they don't have also anarthas that, if they're not careful about, they could get distracted by. But we always have to remember devotional service and one's conditioning are two different things. Mm. Right? Does that make sense? But we tend to equate them as the same. Mm. Because we're engaging the conditioning in the Lord's service, it becomes non-different from the service. Mm. In one sense, yes. But in another sense, no. Mm. Right? Because what's the problem? Because we think, you know, we are the body. Right, so we're doing devotional service because the body's doing devotional service. Does that make sense? So the whole point is it being engaged, that makes it spiritualized. That's what Prabhupada uses the term. Spiritualized means it itself is not inherently spiritual. So you spiritualize the body, the senses, the occupation, you know, one's situation, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. So he's not a high devotee means, you know, he's not developing very seriously. So he doesn't say he's not a devotee. That's the point. He's just not a high devotee. So the point is he may be a devotee, but he's not a high devotee. You know what I'm saying? So here is that one should not think he can commit nonsense. That's the point, is you think you can commit nonsense, therefore you go ahead. Accidental means, you know, you're there's the battle with Maya. And, you know, generally speaking, if one is careful, then one can progress nicely. But it's not that she can't win a battle. But she won't win the war, but she might win a battle. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the point, is that as long as one is committed to it, then one will continue, because then one will be successful, one will win the war. Like, it doesn't matter how many battles you've lost, as long as you win the war. Does that make sense? He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace, O son of Kunti. Declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes.
But sometimes we see that those devotees, especially during Prabhupada,
the big shots. It means like Brahmananda, because he's very weight or. But then that means there wasn't so many big devotees.
Others big.
Bhagavat was big. Guru Das, I think, at one time was big, but I don't know.
Gentleman was tall.
Tall also. You count tall then also, yeah.
So anyway, but they disappeared, and then they
disappeared.
After a short time, or before, whatever.
So you're worried that there's a transcendental Bermuda Triangle. All these advanced devotees are disappearing. And you want to know where it is so you can walk around.
Some of them, they came back.
Some of them came back.
And even here, you know, with memories, some devotees, they fell from their high position and again came back, but some they didn't.
Some they didn't, but you don't necessarily know that they've
didn't,
you know, or that they've ever actually really left. Oh, okay. But the point is what is their commitment? You know, I mean, do they think something else other than Krishna consciousness is the real thing, or it's that it's just not something that they can be, you know, are somehow or another able to get themselves absorbed? Yeah. So if that's there, then it means then, you know, it's not very well situated. But the point is, it's whatever service they've rendered won't be lost. So it's that if the, you know, the situation changes, then they're inspired again, then they'll take it up, then they'll be moved very quickly. Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes you see someone this light, they join, they're like everybody else, and suddenly they move to a very elevated position very quickly, because they've done these things before. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. This is also why one should not be surprised if the second generation, you know, sometimes it goes well and sometimes it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Because they are that devotee. Do you understand? So we say that should never happen, then fine, but then there shouldn't be grihasthas, because otherwise then where will they take birth? You know, like that. Does that make sense? So, yeah, it means all these things are here. See, the general principle is given. Then one is supposed to apply it to the particular situation. So it's not that if you describe five different scenarios, then you're covering what could happen. Now, you know, it's part, you know, part from this one, part from that one, part from here. You know, it's like that. Does that make sense? So it's, in other words, it's not, it's a... Okay, 931. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace, O son of Kunti. Declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. So it quickly becomes righteous. Because it quickly here is just, you know, we're talking, you know, it may take a little while, but quickly, we're talking about if you take up Krishna consciousness in one lifetime, go back to Godhead, that's quick. Right? So then quickly just means within, you know, it's not a long time. You know, we're talking, well, that'll be, well, he did that, so it'll be hundreds of lifetimes. No, it's not. The eternal damnation is a figment of people's imagination. It doesn't exist. There's no concept of it. So, So like that. And declare the devotee never perishes, because once one is committed to the process, then one won't be lost in it. Even if one gets distracted, then one will come back to that same position and continue again. So there's hope. This should not be misunderstood. In the seventh chapter, the Lord says that one who is engaged in mischievous activities cannot become a devotee of the Lord. One who is not a devotee of the Lord has no good qualifications whatsoever. The question remains then, how can a person engaged in abominable activities, either by accident or intention, be a pure devotee? This question may justly be raised. Generally, a devotee who is engaged in the nine kinds of devotional service is engaged in the process of cleansing all material contamination from the heart. He puts the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, and all sinful contaminations are naturally washed away. Continuous thinking of the Supreme Lord makes him pure by nature. According to the Vedas, there is a certain regulation that if one falls down from his exalted position, he has to undergo certain ritualistic processes to purify himself. But here, there is no such condition, because the purifying process is already there in the heart of the devotee, due to his remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, should be continued without stoppage. This will protect the devotee from all accidental fall downs. He will thus remain perpetually free from all material contaminations. Right? So by being fixed in chanting, one can avoid all this. Right? But if there's a problem, if one still remains fixed in chanting, then very quickly everything will be. Right? And so if he's not so fixed in chanting, then he'll just be slower.
Right?
Yes.
If one tries to chant more than normal and maintains it for
what
a short.
How do you define normal? who in your estimation would be normal?
Then the minimum.
So normal is minimum. So somehow the dishes got off the table into the sink. But the table was not washed and the dishes were not washed. And that's normal.
I can't forget what it's called. Prescribed number.
Okay, there we go. Okay, there we go. Okay.
And then for some time is able to continue.
The minimum prescribed number.
Minimum prescribed number. But then is able to continue for some time, but then, like, then it becomes clear that it's like, it's beyond, you know, there's some reaction, it'll kick back from the mind, you know, it's too much.
Too much.
Yeah.
But it is the minimum, so one could be satisfied that one is doing the minimum, that one's not doing any more.
But more than that, I'm talking about, if somebody's doing more than the minimum for some.
More than the minimum. Yeah. Oh, it means that if they go back to the minimum, then why not? It means that you have, you know, it's just like, you know, you have comfort food, or comfort, you know, that comfortable situation, situation where you feel, I'm doing the minimal, then you could be comfortable and slide back into that, yeah.
Okay.
Means that's the idea, is that one doesn't make a vow to do more rounds, you know, unless one is very confident at that. So what would be the thing is if one wants to do more chanting and he, you know, in finding the time here and there because of that desire, he finds that there's a number that he always is consistently able to maintain, then he can in his mind decide, okay, now I'm going to chant that much. But it's already a practice. But he shouldn't just, you know, get, you know, like a Janmashtami, okay, so he chanted more rounds, so now every day I'm going to chant more. No, he should have the determination that if he has time, and he'll try to find the time by not doing something else, right, then he chants more. So then, but I would see that it's regulated. The 16 is what can be chanted. You know what I'm saying? One can be doing activities and engagements and still chant 16. So that's why that number is picked.
Practical?
Yeah, it's a practical number. You know, it's been, you know, that number has been used, you know, basically could say, you know, over, you know, 100 years now. So it's worked.
Because Krishna's in control of the mind and the modes of nature, and then...
You could say he's in control of the mind. But he does it through the modes of material nature. So you could say he's in control of the modes. The modes are in control of your mind.
Okay. And then because Srila Prabhupada, he initially said 64 rounds, and then so he couldn't do it, so then... Then 32, and then he said, okay, if it's 16, it was like, so then did Krishna back the words of his pure devotee and like turn down the like intensity or something of that?
No, see, the thing is, 64 is the standard number that by being associated with that, one will be situated very strongly and one will progress very nicely. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is you do 64 rounds of japa, or you do 16 rounds at 48 rounds worth of service. You understand? So it's not that you're doing 16 rounds and doing nothing else. The idea is that if you can't, if you're not able to absorb yourself in the chanting in that way more, then you absorb yourself in service. Does that make sense? So that way, between the service and the rounds, it makes up 64. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
That's our absolute platform is very nice.
Yeah, no, it's very good. If we accept that, then the whole thing works very nicely. But we're afraid that something will be lost or something won't be gained, right? Because we have faith that there's another subject other than Krishna that has value, right? That's the Four Kumaras point. There isn't anything else. There's only Krishna. So the subject matter, if it's connected to the Lord, it has meaning. If it's not connected to the Lord, it doesn't actually have meaning. Is that some sense? O son of Prita, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, merchants, and Shudras, workers, can attain the supreme destination. It is clearly declared here by the Supreme Lord that in devotional service there is no distinction between the lower and higher classes of people. In the material conception of life, there are such divisions. But for a person engaged in transcendental devotional service to the Lord, there is not. Everyone is eligible for the supreme destination. Right? So he's saying here is that in the material conception, there are divisions. In the spiritual, there's not. Right? So that means, as far as the soul goes, there's no distinction. So everybody, no matter what the situation, can attain to pure Krishna consciousness. But when you're dealing with the material aspect, there is material qualification. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Yes.
Can we say that from a spiritual point of view, you said that we have to do service? And
I always worry about when somebody says, "You said." What do you mean by that? What I said? You said
that we can attain this pure platform, transcendental platform, either by service,
mm-hmm.
not either, both by service and by philosophy, and the philosophical understanding. If we women are less intelligent, it means this passage closed, blocked, halfway through.
Are we? Is this one of those, you know, rare moments of, you know, from the horse's mouth kind of? No.
Just, you know,
it's just
personal.
A question. Okay.
Personal information. How much should we?
No. See, the thing is philosophy. There's philosophy is a principle, and then there are so many details. You know, it's the same as the culture. It's principle. Then there's so many details of application. So the principle anyone can understand. It's just the details may get complicated. Does that make sense? So that depends on the individual. So you will have... It's not that the woman couldn't be expert at philosophy, but it's just generally not as important. It means intellectual satisfaction is not the main position. It's more emotional satisfaction. Right? Because the intellectual satisfaction would be satisfied by principle. You know what I'm saying? It's very clear. It's very straightforward. And so that works very well. Then you have those that they like details, so they're only satisfied on the intellectual platform if it gets, you know, into so much detail. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of value and priorities, because it's not just women, it's everybody. That's why it gives this list. You know, women, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Right? And so therefore, if you're taking yeah, okay. Then does that half answer it? Okay. Then the other aspect is that less intelligent doesn't mean less academic ability. That's generally how it's interpreted. But, as we mentioned in the first point, that's already defined there. You know what I'm saying? Because women are very expert in certain things, but they're just expert in what's important to them. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, yeah. So, like you know, the curtains match with this, or what you're wearing, it all matches, or to get the clothes and the accessories to match, or to match the clothes and accessories to the actual situation you'll be in. That's very developed. Men generally don't worry about that so much, right? You know, if they do, then you might worry about that. So the point is but that's all intelligence, because they're discriminating. No, that one won't go over there. This one, that shade won't work here. Or that shade's good. It all matches, but that won't fit the situation. So that's intelligence, but it's just been applied there, because by applying it there, then one will get emotional response. One will be able to function in that emotional environment comfortably. Does that make sense? So intelligence has been used. So it's not that academic ability is not there. Does that make sense? To have knowledge and all that. But it's generally practically applied in something that will generate a relationship. Does that make sense? Well, for the men, the intelligence is used to get something accomplished. So I'd say the women are accomplishing something, but it's within the field of emotion. Well, the men are accomplishing something, so within the physical platform, not the emotional platform. Right? Because the senses and the intelligence are connected, so the men work in that area. Does that make sense? So here, when the Shastra says women are less intelligent, it's not meaning, you know, academically or practically. Does that make sense? What it's meaning is that the distinction between intellectual, emotional, and sensual, the women don't make that distinction. It's one aspect that you're emphasizing this a little more, emphasizing that more, but it's one thing. So because of that, when you come to the point of, you know, because we said knowledge is being able to discern between matter, spirit, and the Lord of both, right? So the women can tell, okay, this is spiritual, this is material. Right? And this is what, you know, Krishna. But the point is because of attachment, then, you know, that element of dependency, that attachment, then even though one can discriminate, one won't necessarily act according to that. That's where less intelligent is. So the Vedas, when they're talking about intelligence, they're not talking about the IQ or anything. That's how basically most men of the world, you know, would prefer to interpret that point. But as we see, the sages who are liberated, to them it doesn't matter. They don't have a need to control and enjoy women, so they wouldn't want to say they're less intelligent so you can control them, right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that was the advantage of the Darwinism, is then you could use it to explain that this group of people, then we can control and enjoy, right? Because they're less developed, so therefore we can control them. Does that make sense? So the principle is there. It's just as this, you know, they can control the women less, then you shift it over and make it philosophical and apply it somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? So that's not what it means. Though most people will interpret it that way. And that's why the women get bewildered, because, you know, they can learn as many shlokas and are as good in skills as much as the men and this and that. And so what's the big, what do you mean? You know? It means that when it comes to the actual practical application between the detachment and attachment, the women can't apply it. You understand? They can go from attachment to material to attachment to Krishna. But they can't go from attachment to Maya, detachment from Maya, and then attachment to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? They can go attachment to Maya and simultaneously attachment to Krishna, therefore detachment from Maya. But it's not the detachment that is of interest. You're only detached because, you know, there's nothing of value there. Or you use detachment to simply encourage the relationship. Does that make sense? But it's not a situation or a positioning for women. Men go from attachment to detachment to attachment again to the spiritual. If they can do it also more simultaneously, better. But if not, then that kind of regulation they can do. That's why it says spiritual husband, religious wife. Right? Because the wife was not going to be spiritual. She'll be religious either on the material platform or on the spiritual platform. Right? It means acting according to nature. The man can take that, be in that position where it's not material and not transcendental. You know, it's just the Brahman platform. Does that make sense? So for the women, it's either personal here or Bhagavan there. But Brahman and Paramatma aren't a big deal. Does that make sense? Is that clear? So that's what it means by less intelligence. So that's why it's recommended that the women connect themselves to men, because then their discrimination, you know, is there so they can appreciate it, so that if the man brings that point there, then it makes it easier to follow. Does that make sense? That's the idea.
And then in Narasadana, the philosophical study should be emphasized as well?
It should be emphasized, but for you know, how much fits in, how much works. You know what I'm saying? So naturally, in student life, there's more time, and when one's retired, there's more time. And in between, then it gets a bit busy. You know what I'm saying? So it's how much you can put. So if the intellectual aspect, you know, within the woman's purview is more valued, then more time would be spent there. If less is there, then less time would be spent there. But still, there's a minimum. There should be still hearing. That's why there's the Bhagavatam class, and that's like minimum. The Prabhupada expects that one will read outside of that. Yeah. So that's the idea. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the woman will be convinced because it makes sense, because it works within the concept of relationship. Right? The man thinks about it makes sense because it spiritually is logical. You understand? So that's why it said that's not the reason. So as long as the woman's in a good environment where whatever she likes to do happens to be spiritual, then that's good. You understand? Because the idea is a woman's going to do what she wants to do. There's no. There's not going to be a variation on that, you know, like that. So the point is the men should create an environment that whatever the woman does is connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? She is going to dress nice. So therefore, you create opportunity that she can dress nice and then go to the temple. Does that make sense? No, so that like that. So it's going to. So that's why the position of being dependent, because then that works. Then the whole thing. So the feminine nature is not a disadvantage when it's applied in its natural form. It's a disadvantage when one wants to function in the man's world, because the man's world is not designed to generate emotion. So the women working in there, there's not a whole lot for them. So then they're going to waste time there. And then they're going to have to search for the emotion. You know what I'm saying? So there's going to be a lack of satisfaction. So even if you come across the philosophy, then one will have issues with it. You know, on who's in control, this and that, all these different things. They say, and then more time is wasted. Is that a simple thing? Yes.
Is that what Prabhupada means when he says that women have advantage in spiritual life? They can use their emotion in connection to Krishna to go, as you said, directly from...
Yeah, yeah. That's, it's an advantage. But it's only an advantage if it's a protected environment. Because in a protected environment, it's always pious and there's not going to be anything to distract. You know what I'm saying? The man bumps into somebody, he says something stupid. It may annoy him for a little bit, but then it'll go away. But the woman, it may last longer. And then something has to be done about it. There's so many, it becomes very involved. You know what I'm saying? So if it's in a protected environment, then it's an advantage. Because everything that you do connects to Krishna nicely. Because the point is the Brahminical ashram is what? Right? It's the lifestyle of someone who's engaged in, you know, spiritual upliftment. Right? So therefore the Brahminical occupation is exactly the same thing. The Brahminical occupation is only ashram. Right? Patana patana yajana yajana dana pratigaha. So studying, right, and doing puja, giving in charity, these are all parts of ashram. So you study, that means someone's teaching. You know what I'm saying? You're giving charity, someone's receiving it. So it's all part of ashram. So they don't have a separate occupation. Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, that's separate. You understand? And then where are women situated? In the ashram. So their occupation is within the ashram. So technically speaking, they have the same opportunity as the Brahmins. Right? But this is where the less intelligent comes in. They would rather give that up and then move out to work with the Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudras outside. You know, get harassed by the, you know, there's already enough trouble at home. They want to go out and get more trouble. Right? The men come home for shelter. You know, but the women want to leave the shelter and go out there and get their teeth kicked in. Right? And then if they get the teeth kicked in, then, oh, we're women, you can't do that. Kind of like, wait a minute, you're equal with the men, so we can kick in the men's teeth, we can kick in your teeth. You know what I'm saying? So it's not seeing the advantage, so that's why, just like we could say, the Brahminical occupation has an advantage over all the other occupations, and that it can so much more easily be engaged in the Lord's service. It's not that all the other ones can't be. It's just easier. It's more, it's like you're doing puja. It's easy to be Krishna conscious. You're on a battlefield, you know, lopping off heads. You know, it may be more difficult to connect it, though you can. You know, Arjuna did a good job of it. Does that make sense? You know, and you can't say he only lopped off one or two. You know, there's lots of heads, you know. That day he killed Jayadratha, he had to get through some saptakas. I think they're called some saptakas. Means someone who's taken a vow that they're going to kill this person, they get the first right on challenging that person. Right? Because they've taken a vow. So the some saptakas took a vow that they're going to fight with Arjuna. So he had to fight with all those 25, and they weren't just, you know, guys off the street. You know, 25,000 means the guys on the chariot. Now with the guy on the chariot, there's tons of guys that are there on the ground and horses and this and that, you know. Does that make sense? So when you say, you know, the king was fighting, you don't just mean him himself. It means him and his whole army, right? So 25,000 Kshatriyas with all of their men and stuff like that. He had to fight with them first because they had first challenge. Then after that, then he had to get over to where Jayadratha was. And it was arranged that the Samsaptikas would challenge him on this side of the battlefield, but Jayadratha would be on that side, right? And it's not just like, you know, clear open field, you know, 8-lane highway or something like that. You know, German laws, you know, like that. So he could just go away. He has to get through, you know, all the battles, you know, he has to drive around and this and that. So it's not easy. So it was arranged like that.
He did have an expert driver.
Yes, he did. Good driver. Always good to have a good driver. An advantage. So, it's difficult, right? But can be done. But so, therefore, the women's duties being within ashram, it's so much more of an advantage to connect to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the situation itself is more advantageous. The mentality of it's personal is advantageous. So they don't have a problem with the impersonal. Only if they have problem with men, then they have a problem with authority. But it's still personal, because it's all about themselves as a person. Right? But the men get into that kind of funk, then it's kind of like you get rid of being a person. Like that. But the women will never leave being a person. Does that make sense? So that's an advantage. So the idea of the Vedic culture is everybody is able to apply their advantages, you know, to the best result. So if one is saying something else than what the Vedic version is defining, it means one doesn't actually know what one is dealing with. You know what I'm saying? You know, the car is made out of metal, and it's got round things on it. You know, this Lotus, you know, made out of metal, it's got round things. There's one here, right? And one here. So it's got four round things, this has got four round things. So why can't we take this to Calcutta? You know, why do we always, why is it the car always takes everything like that? People pay, everyone neglects this pot. Right? And then you get enough people and talk enough about people who don't know what a car is and driving and all that, or they've seen the car but they don't understand the process of driving. And if I have enough of those people, then after a while I get a movement going. But if people actually understand what driving is, they would never buy it. So I said, no, you can't drive this. You can drive a car, the pot holds water. You understand? So people who don't understand what the masculine and feminine nature is, what the principles are, how it works, they can come up with all these wonderful different sociological ideas, but they don't know what they're talking about. It's that simple. Right? People taking advantage, misusing their position, that's another thing. Correct that. But don't come up with some new idea that doesn't have any reality. Does that make sense?
What is it that makes somebody have issue with how people deal with them?
You know, because they haven't been dealt with properly.
You said attached to where you stay, food arrangements, how people deal with you.
There meant how people deal with you would mean that. That was in relationship to, you know, you speak gently, they speak gently, or, you know, the kind of environments you like to be in to have exchange, or, you know, what kind of words are used, or how they treat you. You respect others, they have to respect you. You know, things like that. It's just, that's all what it is, the social level. You know what I'm saying? In one social level, that unless you use, you know, nice, you know, fancy words, then they consider, you know, they're insulted because, you know, they're talking with an uneducated person. And sometimes the guy in the street uses a fancy word, he gets insulted because it says, if I don't understand it, then, you know, you're you know, insulting me. Mm. You know, so it's just like, you know, so everyone has their conditioning of what they consider as proper social.
And but how come like one self has like parameters that it's like this is okay, this is not okay?
That's called conditioning.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like sitting there is okay, and if I dropped you out in the middle of a lake, you consider it not okay. Right? You know, if I dropped you out in the middle of a lake on top of on a luxury yacht, then you might consider it okay. You know what I'm saying? So the parameters are naturally there. You know, but if I drop a fish, if a fish is sitting here, it'll say it's not okay. I drop it out in the middle of the lake, it'll say it's okay. So according to the particular senses you have in that, then something's okay or not okay.
And what's the difference then? So then, like the dog can't be changed. It's a dog, but it can be made a nice dog or a bad dog. You know, according to
no, you don't have to make it a bad dog. It's already a bad dog.
Okay.
Right? That's why they invented newspapers for bad dogs.
Okay. And So then, because sometimes there's reflexes from the body, you know, if it stubs the toe, you know, or something like that, you know, then there's reflexes. Although Prabhupada, he stood on a drawing pin whenever somebody was putting up a picture, you know, and he walked in, and then he stood on the drawing pin, it went right into the heel, you know, and the ladies, he said, devotee Mataji, she said that he didn't say anything, he just went down and took the pin out of his foot and then just set it on the thing and continued in. You know, he didn't say anything. So, but there are reflexes, you know. So
I mean, where are we going with this?
The point is that, because that would
usually... The point's not the tack.
That would usually get the response. So there's reactions, you know. What I'm saying is there's reactions that happen, and then according to one's conditioning, then in certain circumstances, then there'll be like reactions, you know. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't know what the principle that we're discussing here. See, because the thesis hasn't been presented.
I guess I'm trying to.
In other words, the elements of the environment you've given. But what's the point you want to make? That's not clear.
Well, you can't help it whenever you like. How much can you help it whenever your conditioning responds to something?
But the point is conditioning is there because it's something you've wanted. So conditioning can be therefore purified by wanting that. You know what I'm saying? Because whether it's in a pure state or an impure state, that you can have some say over. What it is, it's there fixed from last life. You know, and you don't want to fix another one, a better one for the next life, you know, in the way of the material platform. So therefore you're simply creating the situation on the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? The person is an active person, so he's active doing something useful rather than active doing something not so useful. You know what I'm saying? Like Guy Fawkes, he was an active person.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you would say, exactly, you know, what at least the persons in the position of rulership would consider, you know, proper activity. You know what I'm saying? But he likes to be active. He could do the same thing somewhere else and it would be considered okay.
Yeah, I see. So discernment, you know, for the discrimination for the particular situation. Is it okay to, like, like in a restaurant, if somebody mistreats the customer, then the customer, according to their conditioning, then they will react in different ways, you know?
Mm-hmm. But still, I'm not clear exactly what you're trying to say.
I was just wondering about that.
It means everyone's going to Iraq, but it's according to training. Now, you know, the waiter doesn't deal properly and you respond, you know, roughly, then why is that? Someone trained you to respond roughly? You know, you were sitting at the table and you kind of became meek and all that, and your father said, don't become meek, you know, we've got to show these guys who it is, we're the customer, we're always right, you know, like that. And then the next time you got up the courage, you said something and thought that, oh, what's that? That's for Buddhas, you know, you got to say like this, you know, like that. Is that how it worked? Is that how, an example? No, I'm just saying, is that how they were trained? Or the person where they act badly and then the person responds in a cultured way, but in such a way to make the waiter understand he's not behaving properly, but he didn't break any etiquettes, he didn't use any rough language or say it in a rough way. That happened just automatically, or that was trained? You understand? In other words, the second one was trained, the first one is just, you know, untrained response.
Yeah, I see.
You know, so the one is you're not behaving nice, so I'm going to make you, you know, feel bad about that. The second one is that you're not behaving nice, so there's etiquette is being broken, so you have to act according to the etiquette. You know what I'm saying? Because the one is, you know, what kind of waiter you, this, that. So they should be a waiter and this and that. And the other one is, no, you're the waiter. Act like one. Yeah. Like that. It's not a matter of the position, your position and my position is going to change. It's just you're not acting according to your position in relationship to me as a customer. Yeah. So therefore, adjust that and then let's life go on.
Yeah.
You understand? So that takes training, because then one is able to see that everyone has a position, everyone has a duty. And so according to that, if everyone does their duty according to the position they're in at the time, then it'll work. Like that. You know, so it's training. It's training.
Thank you.
Yes.
Much again, something on detachment. That was, as I understood, men's higher intelligence, that they are able to...
Higher means... Higher meaning we're... And here is higher is the ability to discriminate between matter and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And to be able to act on that.
Yeah.
Because intelligence means the positioning of the chit potency is in action, in abhideya. Right? Though, sambandha is knowledge. Does that make sense? But where we see knowledge, you know, in its full form is when the knowledge is applied. Otherwise, having the knowledge, that's knowledge, but when you apply it, that's what you'll say. Right? Does that make sense? So, yeah.
But also we know that unless you have the higher attachment, you cannot detach really.
That's there. Yes. Yes, that's there. So that's why they have to be cultivated at the same time. You know what I'm saying? So the two are cultivated at once. Well, the woman may not need to cultivate both, just the attachment to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? We're on 232, right? Oh, we're on the next page, actually. Okay, everyone is eligible for the supreme destination. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18, it is stated that even the lowest, who are called chandalas, dog eaters, can be purified by association with a pure devotee. Therefore, devotional service and the guidance of a pure devotee are so strong that there is no discrimination between the lower and higher classes of men. Anyone can take to it. The most simple man taking shelter of the pure devotee can be purified by proper guidance. It's interesting to note that even though he said this, women, Vaishyas, Shudras, the conversation's not about them.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
The conversation is about lower birth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So these are some examples.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But here he's talking about the chandalas and that. They're also...
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't count them as, okay, well, they're not women, they're not Vaishyas, they're not Shudras, right? So they're not included here.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. It just means anything where the situation of appearance isn't ideal for spiritual development. Does that make sense?
Chandalas pretty much includes everybody else.
Yeah, basically, if you say chandala, you could count all the other kinds of, you know, below shudras.
Mixes of mixes.
Yeah, such. Like that. Yeah, because the chandala is a mix. No, chandalas are just a mix.
Mm.
But it's a inverted, backwards mix.
Mm.
So that already makes it gives the element of being a mix of a mix.
Mm.
That's why it's there. But it's still a pure mix, like that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you want to have some fun with it, then you can say is that, you know, because the Chandalas here, they eat dogs. So in the first world, they're not eating dogs. So that means, you know, then the mentality must be lower than that.
Yeah.
You know, because a dog's a dog, okay? You know, it's like that. Man. So that's low.
Yeah.
You know.
Man's best friend.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. Okay, eating friends is not good. Okay. Yeah, but eating cows is worse, right? You know, because they're worshipful.
Mother.
Yeah. You know, so
friend
between
mother
eating your friend or eating your mother, which is worse. You know, it depends on which society you're in. You know, it's like that. So. Okay. So, devotional service, one is strongly situated in something, some service, and one has the association of advanced devotees, then one will progress very nicely, right? So that, therefore, it doesn't matter. So this is the conclusion within, the Lord comes himself, or his devotees come to instruct everyone, and everyone is eligible to have that instruction and advance and go back to Godhead, right? So in other words, the thesis and the conclusion must basically be the same thing, right? That makes sense? And then in between you give all your details, you know, and how you've come to that understanding, right? In other words, you give the thesis, then your reasoning and examples, that's where you explain why it's there. Does that make sense? And then the conclusion comes right back to, therefore, right? You know, does that make sense? Generally, the association of those born in sinful families is not accepted by the higher classes. But the process of devotional service is so strong that the pure devotee of the Supreme Lord can enable people of all the lower classes to attain the highest perfection of life. This is possible only when one takes shelter of Krishna. As indicated here by the word vyapashritya, one has to take shelter completely of Krishna, then one can become greater than great jnanis and yogis. Right? But not on the material platform. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
What you know and what you're able to do materially, mm-hmm. that remains. You know, by Krishna's grace it may develop, but it's not that devotional service and that they're two different things. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I invest my money, I mow my lawn. It's not because I've invested my money, the lawn gets mowed, because I mowed the lawn, the money's invested. The two different things. So someone from a sinful birth, then devotionally, there's no difference between one living entity and another. Anyone can take up the process and the association of devotees in advance and go back to Godhead.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But what skill they'll be good at is still the same. You know what I'm saying? So if the guy was a plumber, he still will be a plumber. Does that make sense? By occupation. But if he's engaged all day in just hearing and chanting about Krishna, then, you know, generally there'll be no need of plumbing because he doesn't need to make money, right? But if the deity's sink gets plugged, he can fix it. Does that make sense? So we have to understand is these two don't cross. You know, because there's no need. Because anything can be engaged in Krishna's service, so there's no need for it to change. By Krishna's grace, one becomes very expert, but it's expert because of its connection to Krishna, not on its own. Does that make sense? You know, he may go out and become the greatest, most famous plumber in the country, like that, by Krishna's grace, you know.
Mario.
Hmm?
Super Mario.
Yeah.
It's the only famous plumber I know.
Oh, okay. True. You have super models, you have super plumbers.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so greater means on the platform of reality. Because we have to remember, the material world, that's the platform of illusion. Right? Because we think this is better than that. No, it's all Brahman. So it doesn't matter that this one's better than that one.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Because the point is they can all be engaged in the Lord's service. So that means any position is fine. Does that make sense? So, guys offer artiks. So the one says the other, you know, my artiks are better than yours because I can do bigger circles than you. And then the other guy says, well, yeah, well, your arms are longer, you know, like that. You know, so dead? You understand? That's not how it works. We're just adding in our material conditioning. Does that make sense? So unless you're in charge, then it's not good. It's not a high level. No, it does any position.
What about mentally disabled people? They cannot read. They cannot maybe comprehend philosophy.
No, they can comprehend because the principles they can understand. Because philosophy is not comprehended by intellect. It's transcendental. It's only comprehended because Krishna allows you to comprehend it. So therefore, the uneducated person may know more in actual philosophy than someone who has a degree in philosophy from the university. Because the other one knows so many details, but he doesn't actually know what it's for. Like if you walked up to the chair of the philosophy department at a big university and said, okay, you've studied all the religions and philosophies of the world. What's the conclusion? What's the essence? You wouldn't get it. You could go university to university to university. Mm-hmm. You'd never get any answer.
There's no conclusion.
There is no conclusion.
That's what they'll say.
Yeah, there is no conclusion. And then it's kind of like, well, then why study it?
Why? Yeah, exactly.
Why are you wasting your time? You know, why would you waste your time with something that there is no conclusion?
They have to make a living.
You have to make a living. Okay, well then that's fair enough. You're making a living. Right?
So don't get puffed up.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So it doesn't know. So you had one disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He used to work in the garden. Like that. Work in the garden. I'm not sure if he also worked in the Goshala, but like that. That's all he did all day. Like that. But when it came to philosophical conclusion, he was very expert. Like that. You know, so then one day they had someone who was an academic in, you know, philosophy and religion and all that. When he wanted to know more about this, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent him to this devotee. Because he understands by doing service. He has faith, he does service. He associates with devotees, so he actually understands. Yeah, does that make sense? Right? But if one has academic ability to learn, then he learns it and teaches it. Like someone has to teach it. Does that make sense? But when it says it's open to everybody, it means that.
Like a conclusive truth is just to pop rasa malai in your mouth and remember Krishna.
Yeah, that could work as an application of the conclusion.
That invites Krishna.
Yeah, the idea is always remember Krishna, never forget. So if that makes you remember, then you know, you could do that all day.
A lot of rasa malai.
Yeah. Everyone. What service? Oh, Hari Palpatine, what service do you do? I eat rasa malai.
Didn't Prabhupada say it one time that you can eat your way back to Godhead?
Yeah, if you have that much faith and appreciation and excitement to see Krishna in his new, like darshan, you know.
Usually it wears off.
Yeah, no, you have your tape, your recorder there, and when they put the thing on the prasad, you just go over and down. Like that. You know, and then you eat so much, you do dandavats. So it's all the different elements will be there. You know? Like that. I think Madhu Mangal once has explained to Krishna about all the different ecstasies that are there. You know, And he was all explaining them all in connection with food, you know. So, you know, generally, you know, it's a connection with, you know, the voice chokes up and all the hair stand on end. And so then, you know, he was saying, you know, when I smell the food, then my hair stand on end. Or no, when I hear about, you know, that this lunch, his hair stand on end, or when he smelled and these other symptoms and all that. And then when he tastes, then, you know, he becomes stunned and, you know, so like that. So it is possible.
Prasadam puja.
Yes. Then one can become much greater. Okay, yeah. So that's the principle. So, Briti, Shamshai doubt. Here someone may raise a doubt. Is it possible for an ordinary person to approach Godhead? Right? Because now we're ending one adhikarana. So the whole idea is one adhikarana is complete in itself, and it deals with the doubt to establish the adhikarana.
Hmm.
But having established this point, and it's been accepted, it naturally raises another doubt, you know, because then you have to apply it. You know what I'm saying? The first one is just that you accept it. And then having accepted it, now how do I apply it? So now the doubt comes up here. Here someone may raise the doubt. Is it possible for an ordinary person to approach Godhead? Right? Because you've said, okay, that's that, you know, all these different things, but, you know, just an ordinary person. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.20, Queen Kunti says, you yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service into the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Right. So here, the advanced transcendentalists are able to discriminate between matter and spirit. So that's the point that's being... So she's saying, how then can we women know you perfectly? Right? So the point is on matter and spirit. Right? Not on, you know, how many verses you know or anything else like that, what skill you can do. Does that make sense? That's the point that's being made. And you'll notice that any time this point is being made very strongly and clearly, you know, it's always made by a woman. It's not made by a man. Men never say this. In the Shastra, it's always the women that say. Right? You know, unless Krishna wants to say it, it doesn't matter. He can say whatever he likes. Does that make sense? So Kunti says it here. Other places, the Bhagavatam, when it comes up again, like when the Urvasi with Puru Ravas, then she gives three verses. So she's saying that. If a man was saying that, then he could make some complaint. But a woman's saying it, so you can't really complain. You just kind of hope that everyone will forget and, you know, stop talking about it, right? But you can't complain. Is that anything? Yeah. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Right, so you're saying is that ordinary person, they can approach. So here is saying, you know, how can we women know you? And then out of thousands among men, you know, then hardly one knows Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So is it actually as available as you say? Right? Does that make sense? So that brings us to the next adhikarana, which is adhikarana 5. How many adhikaranas are there? There is only 5. Okay. So that means to the end of the book, now we're on this
outcome. Six.
There's 6?
I
can only have 5. Did I get ripped off?
Back side.
Did I get cheap?
You got ripped off?
Ah, there's another page. Okay, hide it from me. Okay, so 6. Okay, so this is not good. Okay, Adhikarana 5, lessons 32 to 37. The confidential servants of Godhead explain that any man can attain to the transcendental loving service of Godhead by his own occupation. Okay, so that's the point, is that their own occupation. So that's why it's any man can do it, because the process is taking your occupation and connecting it to the Lord. Right? So any man can do that. That means any occupation. Right? And now in this thing, the brain madly whirls through all occupations and goes, well, what about a butcher? You know, like that. Okay. cool. Give another one. You know, and then the stop. You know, or maybe a
bullfighter. Bullfighter.
Bullfighter. Okay. Another one.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, they call those the, you know, the prostitute, the one that's in charge.
Oh, it's time for your question.
No, what's the name of this occupation?
I mean, the general word is called pimp. Like that, but that's if it's a man. He's generally the one who goes and gets people, but the one who manages generally is a lady, the senior lady, and she's the, generally called the madame, you know, like that. And
Asham leader.
Maybe, depends upon where, you know, and when. You know. In Vrindavan, they had such a program, yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's just, we'll go through and we'll catch one or two and then that's it, you know, like that. So it's not, but there's a principle that's there. So that can always be applied. Like, I don't know if I mentioned the one we were flying from New York to India. So we stopped in London to pick up all the devotees. They had hired a full plane. You know, they got a jumbo jet. And then so many from America got on and flew to London, and then so many from Europe got on there, and then, you know, flew to India. And then when we were in London, then, you know, I think it was Sunday and that, so then we all shaved. So there's this one devotee who was there in the bathroom, and he would give you like a perfect shave in 90 seconds. You know, no cuts, no nothing missed, perfect. I mean, it was like, you know, like that. And so as he's shaving, going through it so quick, but not like frantic, just like so expert.
Yeah. Head, face, everything.
I don't exactly remember. It doesn't make much of a difference, but whatever it is, you know. I mean, in other words, seekers were still there, ears were still left on, and there was no stubble sticking out here and there, right? So, going through, and as he's shaving my head, and I'm going, "Wow, you're so good at this." He says, "You know, were you a barber before you joined?" And he just very pleasantly and matter of fact, he says, "No, I was a butcher." You know, that's kind of like the conversation ends, and you just kind of like, "Okay." And then the next one. You know, so he could utilize his profession in Krishna service. Yes. So, Adhikarana 5. The confidential servants of Godhead explain that any man can attain to transcendental loving service of Godhead by his own occupation. Right? So, here, anybody. So, the previous one is that the Lord and the confidential service is going to come and preach. And now it's being said is there, and the preaching is anyone can attain by engaging themselves in the Lord's service. So, lesson 32. The four castes are scattered all over the universe according to acquired qualities of the modes of nature. 4:13. According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. Yeah, so the four cats, they're changing, right? They're scattered all over like that. So it means everything, the whole human society is all according to this. So whether it's on this planet or any of the other planets, they're still functioning. Brahma, you know, on the high planet, he's a Brahmin, right? Although the sages on, you know, the Tapa Loka, what is it? You have Maharjana, Tapa, and Satya. Yes, so the jhana, it means all of them. Maharjana, Tatya, Tapa, and Satya, all of them are Brahmins. Right? Basically speaking. So then that's there. You know, Indra and all that, they're generally following the Kshatriya kind of thing. Right? So you have different places that they're following different aspects. So it's throughout the universe. It's not just here. Okay. But Krishna, even though all this is going on, he's in control of it, but he's still he's not the doer, the individual living entity. It's their desire is what is causing them to be involved in whatever they're involved in, you know, pushed by the modes of nature, like that. Lesson 33. The Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Shudras, right? So here are the four castes, they're scattered all over, and so that means Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras are distinguished by the qualities born of their own natures, in accordance with the material modes. Right? How you tell is what are the qualities, but not something else. Right? It doesn't say the particular work, it says the qualities. O chastise of the enemy, peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, and wisdom. No, wisdom and righteous religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahmins work. Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leadership are the natural qualities that work for the Vaishyas. Farming, cow protection,
Kshatriyas.
Farming, because Vaishyas is right below.
Right on, yeah.
I didn't even see that one. Farming, cow protection, and business are the natural work of the Vaishyas. And for the Shudras, there's labor and service to others. Manu is like that also. It has chapters on, means it has six chapters on Brahmins. Right? And then it has, basically, you could say, in general, three specifically on Kshatriyas, right? Two that Kshatriyas manage, but, you know, others have to take advantage. And it has half a page on Vaishyas, and like this, you know, basically two sentences on Shudras, like that, you know. Because it's not Manu's business to tell, you know, you hold a hammer like this, and then right now, pressure, you whack like this, and don't hit your own fingers, you know, just think of the nail, like that. And, you know, so they don't do that.
Maharaj, yes. What about their qualities? Are they in a description like loyalty or something for sure? Something like
that. That's described, but that's also one sentence.
Okay. what are the general qualities?
Shudra means he means chastity.
Chastity.
Yeah. So the point is that it means that you stick to your doing your work nicely for whoever you're working for. You deal nicely with the person who you're working for. You deal nicely with anything connected to the person you're dealing with, and you understand what is the mood or the spirit of that work, and try to catch that and do the work in that way. That's chastity. So that principle applies. You know, because the position is the Shudras with the Brahmacharis also.
Vaidya Bhakti and Vanasram. Some devotees say that we don't need to follow Vanasram because we have Vaidya Bhakti.
Vaidya Bhakti is Pancharatra, it's deity worship. So, do they live outside the temple? They live in the temple.
Sorry, they live outside the temple.
They live outside the temple. So then, how are they going to apply the Pancharatra there? So the Pancharatra talk about the toilet paper. How are they going to engage that? How are they going to engage the sex life? Dealing with their wife, dealing with the children. Okay. You know what I'm saying? How are they going to deal with all that? How do they serve a shot? You know what I'm saying? How do they sit on the couch? You know, who gets to choose what they're watching on television?
That's a consult Pancharatra.
You understand? Pancharatra won't talk anything about it. It's ekaina. So it's directly connected to the deity, or in direct support of what's directly connected to the deity. That's what Pancharatra deals with. So if that's what you do, then you don't have to worry about it. You know, if you're a full-time pujari or full-time preacher and don't do any of these other things, you don't need it, no. Because whatever is there in the Veda that's required has already been lifted and is there in the Pancharatra. But if you're doing anything outside of that, then what's your authority? Right? So they won't follow the Vedic, so what do they follow? They follow whatever's the social and political norms of the particular social environment as a karmi that they grew up in. End statement. It's nothing else other than that. They're European, they will apply European values in their life. If they're British, they'll apply that. If they're American, they'll apply that. If they're South American, they'll apply that. If they're Oriental, they'll apply that. That's the way it is. You know what I'm saying? So, that is to be replaced by Varnashram. So devotees can't figure out why we don't have community. Why not? Because you stick a bunch of people from all these different backgrounds together, their value systems are totally different. Philosophically, they're all the same. Right? But the problem is, by religion, because Varnashram is another name for Varnashram is called religion. You know what I'm saying? Most don't catch that. So devotees are Vaishnav by philosophy, but there's something else by religion. You take the first world, then it's Protestant. Right? Okay, there are Catholics in the first world, but the culture is not dictated by the Catholics. It's dictated by the Protestants. So that means that a devotee would be Vaishnava by philosophy, Protestant by culture. Right? If he's from one of these more out-of-the-way places that are on the edge of that, then they'll probably be Catholic by culture. You know what I'm saying? Or something else. You know, Shinto or, you know, Buddhist or Jewish or something. You know what I'm saying? Something would be there. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that we're supposed to be Vaishnav by philosophy and Vaishnav by culture. So culture is defined by religion. Religion is Varnashram. That's why, for us, Varnashram, Sanatan Dharma, Brahminical culture, you know, devotional service, they're all one thing. Because here it's it. The confidential service of God, explained, any man can attain to transcendental level of service by his own occupation. Who defines occupation? It's going to fall into Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Shudras. There's not a fifth occupation. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So whether it's pious or sinful, it still will fit into here. You know, your modern academic, it's not a technically as pious situation, but it's a Brahman. You understand? So that's the way it works.
So can we say that instead of lacking a proper guidance, we are not following our Varnashram Dharma also, and we are not a good devotee also? It's very more difficult situation.
I'm not sure how you're coming to that conclusion. You know what I'm saying? That means that you say, if we're talking the culture here, but the point is of being a devotee. The devotee is you accept the philosophy and whatever you understand, you're connecting to the Lord. So if you're very absorbed in whatever you understand, then you're rightly situated. The problem is those areas where you're not connecting to the Lord, then instead of it being according to Vedic culture, which is designed to that all the activities are meant to be connected, whether you connect them or not. You know, but Malecha culture is never meant to be connected to the Lord. It's not designed that way. You know what I'm saying? They have some things in there. You know, if someone's really, really religious, okay, he goes, you know, one day a week, you know, to his place of worship. You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit more, then there's a few other services he can go to, you know. Does that make sense? Then before he eats, he'll say some prayers. He may, before he sleeps, say some prayers. And, you know, if they're before his, you know, child, you know, does, you know, their academic exams, he'll say some prayers. You know, and if there's some trouble, he'll say some prayers. But that's it.
When he's gambling.
Hmm?
When he's gambling.
Yeah, when he's gambling. Right. Yeah, yeah. Does that make sense? So the point is it's not, that means the whole rest of the lifestyle. What he cooked, how he eats it, you know, how they behave when they eat, that's not included. How he dresses, how he sleeps, How he takes a bath. Does he take a bath? So none of that's included. So where are they going to get that from? So the Vedic gives definition for everything. There's nothing that's not defined in the Vedic culture. So that means everything can be connected because there's some rule that God gave. You know what I'm saying? So it's so much more of an advantage. It would be so much more easy to follow, be Krishna conscious by philosophy and you know, I say, Varnashram by religion. So much easier. Like that. It's an advantage. But the point is it's so perfect, even if one doesn't understand that, the process will still work. The difficulty is, you know, there isn't any etiquette. Is there an etiquette in the Western modern practice, is there an etiquette in how a teenager should deal with their parents? You know? Like that. Or how the parents should deal when they don't get along with each other in connection to the kid. Can the parents fight in front of the child?
Sure. Right?
Means in the modern thing they can. If you're a little old school, you don't do that. But old school means it's based on a religion. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know. So all these things is there is no definition. So it's very weak in being able to be connected to the Lord. Because if you can't define it, how are you going to understand how it works to connect it? You know, and if one says, no, but there's plenty of followers of the Vedic culture who aren't devotees, it says, yeah, but just make them devotees and then everything's fine. The problem is not being a devotee. Their problem. The other one is that they don't have a culture and they're not a devotee. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just...
You use the words Vaishnava by philosophy and also Vaishnava by culture.
Yeah, so Vaishnava by culture means as the Acharyas define it here, which means following Varnashram, the Vedic. Because that was what his question was about, you know, we're devotees so we don't need to follow the Vedic. But the point is Vedic is there if you're functioning in the capacity of Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas.
Yes.
If you're not functioning according to that, you're just a Paramahamsa, and you have no attachments to anything, hey, you don't need it. But then in that case, you don't need the Pancharatra either. You just need chanting the holy name. You know what I'm saying? In other words, like the Shris, the Madhvas, all those who, you know, are strictly situated in Pancharatra, but when it comes to their family life, they follow Varnashram. Because Pancharatra doesn't deal with family life. There's only worship of the deity. You know, so it will explain how you'd eat and how you'd sleep and get up and take a bath and get dressed. But it doesn't say how you'll deal with the family. It's not part of Pancharatra. That's Vedic. Right? So if someone's not a family person and they want to make that comment, then on one level we could agree. Because whatever's important from Varnashram has already been included in Pancharatra. Because Pancharatra is only taking from Varnashram and just which parts are directly connected to the Lord. That's all. Right? Does that make sense? But if you're dealing outside of that, you know, if one is a family person, then the only thing that deals with family is Varnashram. Right? Means your Brahmacharya means okay, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, that's all about there. You know, Brahmacharya, Vaishya, Shudra, that's all about. So six of them are about Grihasthas. Mm-hmm. Only two of them are not. Does that make sense? Because the Brahmacharya's lifestyle is his occupation. The sannyasi's lifestyle is his occupation. Same with the Brahmin, but he's a householder. So six are dedicated to those who are in the Grihastha. Right? So therefore, that's necessary.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura.